You're listening to The Doorcast, found on every major podcast streaming service, especially Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. The Doorcast is written and produced by your host and yours truly, Liam Dorr, and is recorded in the heart of Manhattan. And welcome back to The Doorcast Season 2 premiere. Last season, we talked about what we wish we knew, the things that we would have changed in years gone by if we could go back. And this season, I want to shake it up a little bit. Today's special guest goes back about 18 years since the last time I've seen him, maybe 15 years. But he's a great guy. He's an expert in film and a friend of mine from childhood. Welcome to the podcast today, Kevin McManus. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Long time no see.
Yeah, really. It's kind of crazy to think about how it's been almost 20 years since we've seen each other.
Yeah.
Because you left Sorrows at what? Kindergarten? Third grade?
No, third grade.
Third grade. So that would be, what are you, eight when you're in third grade?
Yeah, I think that was, 2006, around there?
That was like 15 years ago.
It's been a while.
That's insane. I mean, it's great to reconnect, and it's kind of crazy that we reconnected via TikTok.
That's insane.
Yeah. Did it just show up on one of your, one of my posts just show up on your feed or like?
Yeah, you just showed up on my For You page. I forget which one it was exactly, but I was like, that guy looks familiar. Then I saw the name. I was like, no shot. And I clicked on it and it was you.
Yeah, dude, it's insane. And it's pretty crazy to see that you've gotten into the whole film world, into the ethos of like creating films or wanting to get into the film industry. That is what you want to do, right?
Correct.
What's your dream job?
I mean, everyone, says they want to be a director, which obviously I'd like to do. But honestly, I'm happy being in the creative process, whether it's producer, director, writer, even if I'm just a grip on a set. I'm just happy to help out. I've worked for a couple film festivals here and there as a production assistant, mainly stuff like that. And then I've helped other friends and people in school with their projects, but nothing crazy.
Nice. Well, I mean, you still have time, and I feel like it's one of those industries that once you're in it, you're kind of set, right?
That's what they all say. Too bad it's extremely hard to get into.
It's unbelievable. A year of trying, and I've got to work on two projects. I mean, I am one for one with, or I guess since the other one didn't come out, yeah, I'm one for one. One of the short films we worked on actually won a film festival award.
Really?
Yeah, just out of nowhere. And so now on my resume, I can talk about how I'm an award-winning, can't even call it a producer, what was I, a key grip? I'm an award-winning, I'm an award-winning grip. Just my grip game is, oh God, no.
Anything to pad those stats?
Dude, I mean, I'm on IMDb. That's the craziest part.
Really?
Yeah, and I didn't put myself there, which means somebody else did. Somebody else was going through it, and when they were uploading for this film, they were like, all right, we need to put the cast. And I'm surprised I wasn't left off the list. But yeah, being a grip is it's an interesting experience. It's a little boring, but at the same time, it was in Washington Square Park. So, you get the whole ethos of the city. Definitely something I'd want to do once I get my everything together and move to the city.
Yeah.
Which should be in a few months, but it's fun. But I don't know. Entourage does not make it look as hard as it is.
I've always loved New York. New York's a magical place for me.
Oh, absolutely. Is that where you think you'll gravitate towards?
I think so. I don't know. I've never been to the West Coast for anything longer than the vacation, but I think I'm definitely an East Coast kid at heart. So if I had my choice, obviously the majority of the jobs are on the West Coast, but if it was up to me, I think I'd stay East Coast, go stay local.
Yeah. One of my, I guess he's one of my uncle's brothers is a director out there. He's directed a few things. You ever see Chernobyl Diaries?
Yeah. The Jesse McCartney movie, right?
No. This one goes back to, I think, 2014, 2013. Chernobyl Diaries, Brad Parker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's worked on that. He's worked on Ad Astra, Rise of the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I know there's a bunch of different ones of those. And then currently he's working on the Batman movie right now.
Yeah, you told me about that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so he's been doing a lot of crazy stuff, and he did say that there's a certain level of unspoken respect for people who make it in film, who stay or get their start in New York City.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, first off, it's so hard. It's double as hard than LA, because in LA you can obviously get work, but it might not be good work. But in New York, it's just unbelievably difficult because you don't have all the resources of those major studios.
Yeah. I mean, that's encouraging at least.
Yeah.
When I mean, I was working at the last film fest I worked at, they had like the guys come in and do like little stands and vendors and shit like that.
Sure.
And they had one guy that was saying that they're trying to make the tri-state area like a big movie hub, like it was back in the day, which I was very excited to hear about. But we'll see what happens.
I'm game for that. We got Hollywood, Bollywood, and let's have, I guess, what would it be, Ridgewood?
I have no clue.
Yeah, we can make. We'll turn Point Pleasant into Hollywood because that's what we need: more tourists.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of thrives on tourism,
dude. It's unbelievable. I mean, technically, actually. You know, this is good ruling. If I have a shore house that my family owns in Normandy Beach that we're there all summer, but I rent a house in Point Pleasant, does that make me a tourist?
Technically, probably, because you're not, you know, homegrown.
Okay.
But the fact that you own two properties and you've been coming here, I would assume, for years now.
Oh, yeah. It's a group of people like my age and a few years older who all just met through, you know, Manasquan gossip.
Yeah.
And we all met through that and we all decided to rent in Point Pleasant for the summer. And then my family owns the other house down the block or down the road a ways.
I'd say technically still tourists, you're like a step above a normal tourist. I wouldn't go as far as to call you like a Benny or anything. Oof.
Yeah. Don't do that. I'd have to kick you off the podcast right here.
Yeah, you get a little bit more street cred, but you ain't a local yet.
You know what? That's fine. I can accept that. Do you ever go to Jank's then?
The boardwalk or the club?
To the club.
Oh, hell yeah.
Dude, I go there like every weekend. I haven't seen you.
I'm shocked we haven't run into each other. Especially.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? I have got Belmar flu twice this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have just been out of commission for 2 weeks at a time, and I'm like scared to sometimes go to my house because other people have Belmar flu.
Yeah,
it's been such like the weather's been so bad.
Fourth of July weekend sucked. It was raining all week.
Oh, Fourth of July and Memorial Day. So let's get into this. First off, what was the what was that first thing that got you into film? What was that moment where you're like, wow, this is really cool?
I have two. No, I have one answer for this. The moment you're talking about right there would be 2001 Space Odyssey.
Really?
Yeah. I watched that in high school, I want to say sophomore year. And I'll probably definitely get some shit for it, but like I watched – this was before I was like super into movies. I knew like the classics, which to me at that point were like The Godfather and, you know, OG Star Wars, but I had never really branched out to anything crazy. And I just had a lot of free time. So I started getting into movies a little more seriously. And I would watch a lot of them on my laptop. And that's where I watched 2001. It was like middle of the day, watched on my laptop. I was kind of in and out of paying attention, doing other stuff like on my phone. And I really wasn't a fan of it. I didn't like it. It was just like, I was young and dumb. I was like, oh, I could have, you know, changed this or fixed this, or I would have done this differently. I just had a lot of opinions about it. And then I kind of left it for probably a couple of weeks or a couple of months. And I saw that they were showing it in a movie theater around me. It might've been in the city, actually. It doesn't really matter. They were showing it in a movie theater. And I was like, I liked it enough. And it was like, it was obviously the movie's famous for the scene at the end with all the lights and stuff. So I was like, that would probably be cool to see on a big screen in a movie theater. So I went there and it was like a whole experience I've never had with another movie. And I've never had to that level with another movie since. And that was the first movie that like opened the door to me. That was like, oh shit, this is an actual like thing. This can make you feel a whole lot of emotions. scare you, you know, make you happy, make you sad. It was the first movie that like made it click in my head that it's bigger than just moving pictures.
So in this scenario, the reason that it kind of hit you was because you saw it on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. 100%. So instead of watching it on your laptop, you said.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a killer for so many movies. But also Kubrick is not the kind of guy where you can just throw your laptop down and kind of watch the movie, kind of do another thing.
Not at all.
Oh my God. No, I watched Clockwork Orange one day when I was doing laundry. That was like the first introduction I had to Kubrick, watching Clockwork Orange while I had to do a load of whites. And every second I didn't understand anything because, you know, between him drinking a glass of milk and dancing or beating somebody with a cane, I'm like, all right, well, let me fold this. Let me put this on a hanger. You really have to devote a lot of time to Kubrick. He's not one of those like movie of the week type guys where you can see it on TNT or CBS yeah. or whatever. And so, yeah, I completely get that. So what was what's the feeling like walking out of the theater after like the movie that kind of just like changed everything for you?
I mean, it sounds really corny, but the only word I can think of right now is like transformative, because like it really felt like a moving experience. It was just like a bliss over, like it, everything just connected finally.
Really?
Yeah. It was really cool. To this day, it's my favorite movie because of that experience I had with it.
And you had never felt that ever before like that?
No, because I don't think I was watching movies to that extent. Like, I wasn't really watching artistic movies or anything crazy. I was watching, like, you know, Fast and Furious, stuff like that. Nothing, you know, exactly high art.
Well, I mean, 2001 A Space Odyssey and Fast and Furious 9 are pretty similar, though, I would say. Yeah. Because they both go to space, which is...
I haven't seen the new Fast 9 yet. I'd, you know, spoil anything, obviously. We all know.
I think those
direction.
Those memes have been going on for...
Yeah.
Which people think that that's actually a plot by the studio to get people to go see the movie.
It's a genius plot. It's working.
It is. And, well, I mean, Black Widow blew it out of the water at the box office.
Really? I haven't seen any numbers for this weekend.
Oh, I think Black Widow opening weekend was like 8 times higher. It was crazy.
Well, that's the Marvel, you know, machine for you.
It literally is. It's a machine.
Yep.
They have it down to an exact science. But let's circle back to 2001 Space Odyssey. So this is the movie. When I texted you earlier about like that one transformative movie, this is that movie?
Correct.
So did it change anything? You know, I mean, obviously it changed your ethos. It got you into what you wanted to do. But did it change any of your mentalities? Were like, was the theology behind it or the philosophy behind the movie something that, was there something that you took with you?
I wouldn't say that on my first viewing, especially because 2001 is such a heady movie and it's so ambiguous and open. You could pretty much take anything you want from that. But what it did for me is like it really clicked in that it's more than just like telling a story. You can tell a story without exactly telling a story. Because I remember the first time I watched it, I was really hung up on the last, I'd say, 2/3, like the Hal arc.
Sure.
Because I thought that's what the whole movie was. But anyone that's seen it, well, you know, spoilers, knows that like the whole first 20 minutes are about monkeys with no dialogue. And then the whole last like 20 minutes, I don't even know how to describe what it is. And it's such an out there movie. And it like pretty much shits on the majority of like narrative structures. And that's why it's such a divisive movie for people that aren't really in the know or like such fans of the movie making process. But it's just such a trailblazer for everything that's, you know, come since then. I think it's like the start of modern day sci-fi, and I'm a big sci-fi nut.
Really?
Yeah. I
think that's, you know, a lot of people will credit Soylent Green or Planet of the Apes to the, a lot of people actually give Charlton Heston the crown when it comes to like what got everybody into sci-fi. And some people say Logan's Run, though I personally don't, I'm not a huge fan of Logan's Run. But you think that this like 1968, this rolls around. I guess that you have a point there, because the 70s were, I don't want to say the golden age of sci-fi, but they were really where that all kicked off.
100%.
I mean,
and like, if you think about it, this came out the same year as Planet of the Apes. And don't get me wrong, Planet of the Apes definitely blew it out of the water in terms of audience numbers, because that was a way more profitable movie. But I think 2001 took it with more of a seriousness than Planet of the Apes did, and that's why, for me, it's number one.
Do you think that people in back in the day were ready? Because I'd say, you know, I have a lot of problems with the modern day, but what I will say about us as a society right now is we are serious thinkers. We're big critiquers of basically everything we see. Do you think that people in 68 were, I guess, ready to see something that was such a story of like man versus machine, or like the evolution of man, and walk out of the theater and be thinking about it? Like, you know when you see something or read something and you want to think about it, and you're lying in bed, you're trying to fall asleep, you're trying to like connect the dots, things like that. Were people in that time period ready for something like that? Or had they not had enough of the genre to be like, all right, this is an appropriate reaction to a divisive, to like a almost philosophical sci-fi movie?
There's definitely got to be people, like some people that are capable of doing that, but in the grand scheme of things, I definitely don't think the majority were. I think a lot of people probably left the theater after seeing that, confused as hell,
yeah,
at what they just watched, which is something that draws me to it. I kind of like that.
So it's you want to walk out and be challenged. Yeah, the movie doesn't end when the credits roll. It's when you're thinking about it. That's when it really...
Exactly.
Interesting. Huh. I like
especially
that.
With sci-fi.
You know, sci-fi, I love sci-fi. I really do. But for me, there's two buckets, and it's either way, way, way too much. So I'd say something like, and I don't want to discredit this movie because I do love this movie. I really do. I'd say something like Phantom Menace is just way, you're doing way too much.
Yeah.
But
I agree with that.
I'd say that there's also ways to really not give, it almost doesn't, there's some movies I feel like don't give enough of sci-fi. And that's just because I guess directors, writers, etc., they want to ground in some kind of reality, even though they're living in like, you know, be it futuristic, be it high-tech, things like that. The writers, whatever, their idea is to ground it in some sort of reality. And I think that grounding anything sci-fi in reality, any kind of movie when you have this high-tech stuff involved, these themes that we can't even comprehend to be what could be a part of our society, it almost takes away from it being sci-fi, if that makes any sense. So
yeah,
there's sci-fi, then there's futuristic.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and you know, that's like, so for me, like Terminator, it's sci-fi, but it's really more futuristic than anything, because yeah, it's grounded in such reality that it doesn't go as far as having space wizards with their laser swords. But you know, I will say I saw 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I'm still at that point where you were watching on your laptop, because when I was a kid, I think I saw it when I was 16 on vacation in Florida. It was like on network television.
Yeah.
So it's been a while since I've seen it.
You definitely got to jump right into it. Yeah, 100%. If you're not ready for what it is, it will leave a bad taste in your mouth. Like I've loved this movie ever since, you know, I had that experience in high school, so I swear by it. But whenever I try to show one of my friends or talk to my friends about it, I always say, like, you're probably not gonna like it. It's not your type of movie. It's not one of those. It's not like a turn your brain off, we're all hanging out in the basement, let's watch something. It's not one of those. So it's definitely not a movie for everybody, not to sound like pretentious or anything, but you have to want to watch this movie to really enjoy it, I think.
Are you that guy who shows people movies that you think they might not like?
I try not to be. I tend to show people things that I really like, but I do try to keep a very conscious idea of who I'm showing it to.
Yeah.
Like with quarantine, I did that a lot with my parents, of showing them stuff that I've been trying to get them to watch for years, but obviously I knew there's some stuff they just wouldn't accept or wouldn't get into.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue when you want to... It's almost like sharing a secret with somebody, you know? It's like, because the things you love about a certain movie are going to open or at least pave the way for someone else to learn more about you.
Yeah.
And that's why, I guess it's hard to show people movies. Cause I once tried to watch, you ever watch Into the Wild?
Yeah.
I once tried to watch Into the Wild, with someone, and they were just like, oh, this is like really stupid. I don't like this. This isn't a fun movie. And I was like, well, it's not supposed to be fun. You're just like, do you not feel bad for the kid? Like, you don't feel bad that he can't live in society? And she was just like, no, this is a stupid movie. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know why you like this. And I ended up watching American Pie 2 with her, which she loved. it's a weird default. The American Pie default has been like a very prevalent theme in my life. Whenever me and whoever are watching a movie and they don't like the first 15 minutes of it, we default to American Pie, which is just, it's a weird thing that we always do, but.
Don't get me wrong. I love the American Pies, but that is probably a very random default choice out of all the movies out there.
Well, it's a pleaser. That's it. That's the only reason that it even, you know, it hits so many fronts where it's like, oh, the 90s nostalgic vibe or like the gross, like gag humor vibe, things like that.
It's definitely a classic. That whole franchise is definitely a classic. But yeah, showing a movie to somebody is an incredibly vulnerable experience, especially if it's a movie you like really connect with and really love. It's like, it can be terrifying at times. There's no worse feeling than like a joke not landing or like something really meaningful happening, and then you look over at them and it's just stonewall.
I mean, and to that note, you're not even watching. When you show someone a movie, I'd argue you're not watching the movie. You're watching them.
Oh, 100%.
You're watching them to see what their reactions are, to see if they can love the things that you love.
Yes.
I did that once. My favorite movie of all time, American Graffiti. It's George Lucas's second film from either 72 or 73. And we can get into later why it's just my favorite. Yeah, 73. Why it's my favorite movie of all time. But I showed it to my brother and my dad when I was about to leave for abroad. So this goes back to, I want to say August of 2019. Oh, I'm sorry, August 2018. And I show it to them, and the entire time I'm watching their reactions. And that, you know, it's 1972, but it's supposed to be like a 50s, 60s movie. And so all the humor, like, instead of them understanding it once or twice, they'll like make a jab at it or they'll like make fun of it. And I was so disheartened by this, by an hour in, I just turned the movie off and said, all right, we're done. We're not watching this. I'm going upstairs to finish this by myself.
I've done that exact same thing.
Yeah.
Cause I've been foolish to try to show people movies I like in like a party or like a more hangout setting. And like, as soon as one comedian starts going, everyone starts ragging on it, and it just ruins the experience for me. So I've gotten up and left.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you said, I've changed it. Like, you're not ruining this movie for me. We're watching something else.
Yeah, and that's trust. At the bottom of it is trust. And I don't think a lot of people think about it like that. A lot of people just like, oh, this is a movie this person likes. And a great example, I guess, for me would be, I'm a big Star Wars nerd, but it doesn't just come from me being like, oh, I like this, like space is cool. Like that was such a pivotal thing in my childhood. And I know that's like a lot of people.
Yeah.
But like when people on TikTok, like girls on TikTok will talk about their Star Wars boyfriend, or like people will say like, oh, this person likes Star Wars. There is so much meaning behind why people like these things.
Absolutely.
And that's, I think, what's kind of amazing about film, because it defines it. You define it, but it defines you.
Oh, definitely. What's do you remember your first like real movie memory? Not like some dumb kids movie you had when you were a child, but like your first like grown up movie.
Yeah, well, so I guess that's funny you mentioned the kids one, because my first movie I actually ever saw was Return of the Jedi in a church basement.
Really?
Yeah, it was, you know, I grew up Christian, so we would always do like vacation Bible school. And at one point I was too young for the program, so my mom, who was like running it, just put it into Star Wars because she knew Star Wars was a kids movie, which I argue now that it is not, but that's I know when I said that, I was like, oh, wait, that's not going to be well received. But, you know, Dave Filoni has his own theory on that. But yeah, so actually it is American Graffiti. 100%, like my first adult experience with a movie where I was like, holy shit, this is life-changing, was American Graffiti. And I'll tell you the story behind it, actually. I was either 18 or 19, and it was the summer going into my sophomore year of college. I actually transferred colleges. So I'd gone from Loyola to Marist over the course of my freshman year. I didn't really connect with a lot of people my first 4 months at Marist, and I was moving in, and the summer beforehand, I watched American Graffiti, right? And there's this one scene where Richard Dreyfuss is looking for this like beautiful girl who's driving up and down the strip. But the issue is the next day he's leaving for college. So like, you know, it's like pertinent to my own life. And the next day he's leaving for college and he's looking for this girl because apparently she mouthed out, "I love you" to him. And the biggest guy in Modesto on the radio is the Wolfman Jack, who was actually a real person back in the 60s and 70s. And Kurt Henderson. Yeah. So he spends the whole night like going to a sock hop, things like that, driving up and down the strip. He finally makes it to the radio station. He's like, "I need to request this song. I need you to give a shout out to this girl." And I got chills for some reason as I was watching. I was like, wait a second. I've been here before. I've seen this before. I don't know where I have, but I've seen this before. And like, I had seen the movie before in my life as a child, watching it with my grandfather on network television, because, you know, he grew up in that time. So he obviously saw a movie that was him as a kid. So we watched it and I was like, oh my God, it's been 15 years, but somehow this is a memory I'm clinging to. So I keep watching the movie, and it is a super corny movie. I could admit that. But the idea of like growing up, moving out, flying across the country to school, whatever, that stuck with me. And so I finished watching it, and there's this last scene that people say ruins the movie. And I think it probably shouldn't exist, but Kurt is flying to, I think, Vermont to go to school. And it gives you their yearbook photo and what happened to them. And like one dies a drunk driving accident, or no, like gets hit by a drunk driver, or one abandons his post in Vietnam. And like, it's a weird ending, but it's just almost an ineffable feeling after watching that movie, because the entire thing is like, you're growing up, you're moving out, you have to do these things you're afraid of. And every single person thinks they know what they're doing. And by the end, they're doing the exact opposite. And I walked out and I was like, wow, I want to get into film. I want to make movies, or at least help make movies, or at least help write movies. But at that time, I was too deep in my major at college to switch. So it's still something I really do want to do because of American Graffiti. You know, people always say their favorite movie is a George Lucas movie. You immediately default to A New Hope.
Yeah.
But no, it really was an elevating experience to see that movie. And I really don't know why. Because of all the movies you could choose, of all the films you could choose, between all the Cinema Paradiso to The Godfather to all the greatest movies of all time, choosing a rock and roll movie from the 70s, a very obscure one at that, is weird. But I don't know what it is. There's that one movie for everybody, and it seems like 2001 is yours.
100%. But that's what makes movies so special. Is it, they connect with you out of nowhere for whatever random reason, and it stuck to you like glue for the rest of your life.
So how often would you say that you watch 2001 then?
Well, I'm actually watching it right now in the background as we speak, but...
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Didn't we just talk about how you can't watch Kubrick in the background?
Yeah, but I've seen this movie so many times. Okay. I know every single plot point. I definitely watch it at least once a year.
Yeah.
Probably more.
Is there any ceremony to it?
Nah, not anymore. No. Just because I've seen it so many times. Like I said, I know this movie like the back of my hand. I still get enjoyment when I show a new person it every now and then, when I actually did last week or a couple days ago, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was their reaction?
They were very into it, very, 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 not excited, they're excited about how excited I was, but they're very open to it. It went a lot better than I thought it was. Unfortunately, they fell asleep halfway through, as did I, so I can't fault them. It was very late at night, but it was received very well for what we stayed awake for.
For a divisive movie.
No, absolutely.
There's not like that one point in the year where like, oh shoot, it's time to, there's not like the Ted Mosby trilogy time where it's like, this is a very important time. I have to watch this film or these films at this specific time because it somehow has some meaning.
Calendar wise, no, but it's definitely like a feel good comfort movie for me.
Oh, okay. Cause my late August American Graffiti, screening is tradition at this point.
So, I love that.
Yeah, well, it started at the end of going into my sophomore year of college, just because they're always talking about like going off to college, going off starting your life. And then sophomore year into junior year rolls around and I'm like, "Oh, you know what? I got a Snapchat memory of me watching this movie." And then by then, it's like, you know, 4 years later, 3 years later, that's what I do every end of the summer. Though I will say, and I'll ask you this because there's definitely, at least for me, kind of like this weird tether. You know that like 50s, 60s, like Beach Boy vibes, like kind of stuff, like doo-wop-y almost?
Yeah.
Do you ever get those vibes from being down at the Jersey Shore?
Honestly, I do.
You do? Okay. Because I thought I was alone in that.
No, I 100% do. And I think it's just because, especially in the summer, it seems like time almost moves slower down here. I don't know what it is. I think just generally speaking, most people are in a better mood. You know, they're on vacation, sun's out, they're having fun. But it, like, if you took a snapshot of where I live in Point, it, like, and said it was New Jersey, I would call you a liar, because everything you hear about New Jersey,
yeah,
it's not what the Jersey Shore is. That's why I personally love Jersey. That might be a very divisive opinion. I think it's one of the better states just because it's so different. There's so many different pockets of people and, you know, environments and styles. It's crazy. But Jersey Shore especially, I 100% agree with you.
It's just, I don't know what it is. And I guess more and more as I grow up, I get that, you know, because, you know, when you watch a movie and the person's within your age range and within your situation range. So like for me watching American Graffiti, obviously they're going off to college. That's what I was doing. Now that I've aged out of that situation, like I've aged out of being somehow tied to the person in the movie's scenario, I can better see other people doing it. So I was actually in, I was in Normandy Beach 2 weeks ago, and they just opened this new burger place. And it's like, it's even got like an old 60s looking sign or whatever. And aside from all the TikTok looking motherfucker kids, that's mean. But aside from like all like the modern looking kids, you know, yeah, like the ones with like the hair that looks like an eraser, and who wear like the shorts with like the long socks, there were some like normal looking kids there. And I was like, damn, you know that it's 2021. Kids have been doing this probably down here, going to the local burger place, getting a burger and a shake at the shore, probably since doo-wop was on the radio.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, man, time moves different down here.
It really does. And that's just kind of, you know, when you watch a movie that's time period is so lost in history, it's fun to see the things, some little things about it, some little themes be applied in the modern world.
Absolutely.
That's deep. Wow. So let me pivot here. We talked about the movie that was most impactful that like got you into liking movies, into thinking film is something you can do, into loving the medium of film. What was the movie that you, as the message, the philosophy behind it, the theory behind it, what was the movie you took the most from? Like, be it like a code or something, or like a belief system, or some, you know, Chris Nolan's justice ideology. What movie did you take the most lesson-wise from or have you taken the most lessons wise from?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have an answer for that.
Really?
I really don't. What's yours?
You know, I was hoping that you would, I was hoping that you would have one and that would spark me to start thinking about mine. So I think we're both in the same place.
Like, I'm looking at my wall of DVDs I got here and I don't know.
You a big DVD guy? I don't think,
oh, absolutely. I love
DVD collection guy?
Physical media. Hell yeah.
Nice.
Looks better on a shelf.
It does. It's the modern book collection.
It's definitely less convenient, but it's more fun to look at. I don't know if there's a certain movie or anything that like really opened my eyes to the way the world works. Maybe Indiana Jones. I'm going to go with Indiana Jones.
Which one?
Let's go with the trilogy.
Really? Even Temple of Doom?
I am a Temple of Doom defender. It ain't the best.
Dude, it is just 2 hours of screaming.
Yeah, it's depressing.
It's not dark. Fun. You see your hero become a villain.
It's an odd movie, but it's in the franchise. I gotta love it.
I mean, so is Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but are you gonna tell me you want to defend that too?
I'm not that as passionate about that one.
Okay. Good. That's thank God that you can at least admit that one has some flaws.
So then we'll go with just Raiders if we're gonna go with those rules.
All right. You know what? I can't fault you on not liking or on defending Temple of Doom. I defend Phantom Menace to people all the time.
Yeah.
We could talk about that.
TikToks.
Thank you. It's a good movie. I don't care what anybody says. The Phantom Menace is great. Qui-Gon Jinn is so underrated. So it's the first one for you?
Yeah. I really resonated with the character of Indiana Jones. He's always been one of my favorite like fictional characters. I really just liked how he has such a like fuck it attitude and
yeah.
Nothing really sticks to him. He does his own thing. He doesn't really care what people think. So that's how he lives his life. And I'd like to think, you know, I do the same, but who's to know?
Well, I mean, if you're thinking it, that means you took something from it, you know, either subconsciously or not, you have some Indiana Jones-esque traits.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously not trying to inflate any egos here, but if you're actively thinking about this character's personality traits, his character traits, whatever, and you can see them in your own life, well, then, I mean, that's got to be an impactful character, and then that's proof that you've taken things away from a character, and I think that's what everybody wants, what directors want.
It definitely Indiana Jones at a young age, but now that I think about it, it might just be Harrison Ford, because I probably felt the same with Han Solo, like the first couple times I was introduced to Star Wars.
Really? You know, George Lucas did not want him to be in Indiana Jones.
I know. He didn't want to get pigeonholed of working with Harrison Ford.
He didn't want to be a Scorsese type. Or was it Scorsese or Francis Ford Coppola? I think it was Scorsese.
Yeah, Scorsese with De Niro.
Yeah, he didn't want that. And a lot of people think that Harrison Ford's first Lucasfilm venture was Star Wars. It wasn't.
It was Graffiti, right?
It was Graffiti. He plays the villain in Graffiti. But he's also not even a villain. He just wants to race a kid. And he's like 30 and wants to race an 18-year-old and wrecks his car. But yeah, and even Star Wars, the only work he was doing before he was on Solo is he was a carpenter.
And a drug dealer, I believe.
Was he a drug dealer?
I believe he was a drug dealer in Hollywood.
That's great.
See, I believe he was famous because he was a carpenter, as you said, and I think he built a lot of like hot tubs for people, and he was famous for including little hiding spots for their drugs.
You know, I read something, I think, in the past like 2 days where they were talking about how he was a great carpenter in Hollywood before, and he asked like a kid when he was installing something, do you want me to put like a secret compartment for your toys so your sister can't play with them? And apparently he's like, he gets a bad rap for I guess because he plays gruff characters, and in his older years he has become kind of less than nice. But apparently he was a really nice dude back in the day.
He seems like it.
Yeah.
I love Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah. You know, he also was a, if I have this correct, he was a volunteer rescue pilot.
Really?
And he had a helicopter. He has a helicopter license. And what he would do is he would hear about, I guess, I'm assuming like fires or something, or people stranded in the ocean. And he would fly to try to save them.
That's really interesting. I never knew that.
And that's why there used to be something that people would talk about, like a celebrity death pool. And yeah. he was pretty high on it because he was doing like crazy extreme shit like that.
Good for him.
But imagine you're drowning and Han Solo saves you.
I mean, that's a great bar story for the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah. Do you think that Han Solo was done justice in the new trilogy?
Done justice, I don't know about, but I didn't have an issue with the way his story ended.
Getting murdered by his kid. I thought
it was okay. Yeah, I at the time I probably liked it more than I do now.
Yeah.
Seeing how the other two movies unfolded, but they definitely could have done it better, but it's not enough for, you know, me to hate.
I can appreciate that. And coming as someone who, I think you've seen this either from the content I put out, or I guess, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but I really want to like the sequels. Like,
yeah.
I've sat down many times and have actively been like, okay, you're going to look for positives in these. Dude, I can't get through Rise of Skywalker. I literally cannot get through half of it without being like, what's going on?
I've watched it the one time in the theater and I haven't revisited it since.
It's like you know that ride at Point Pleasant where you strap in and it kind of spins you in a giant circle. It's kind of like one part of it's raised, but it's a giant circular track and it'll spin you frontwards and backwards.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like that. Because you just want to get off. And like in the beginning you're like, this is fun, this is a crazy ride, I'm enjoying this. And then you just at one point after you get really tired of it, you're just like, all right, I need to get off this fucking ride. I'm getting sick from it. And that's, you know, you could spend hours upon hours, days even, on a podcast talking about the issues with the sequels.
Absolutely.
But what I will say for Harrison Ford is that his personality bleeds so much into the characters he plays.
100%.
Because Harrison Ford does not give a fuck.
No. That's why I love him.
When he was asked about being a Force ghost in Rise of Skywalker, he said, what's a Force ghost? he was in the movies where they first appeared and he didn't even know what they were.
He's an OG, man. I love him.
He is. And I don't think we have that. And this is obviously no disrespect to modern actors, but there's not that, I don't want to say caliber, because he wasn't like a trained actor.
No.
But there's actors that have this ethos about them that I don't think we have anymore.
We're also losing the movie star.
I mean, I don't know. I just, you know, if you can name off the bat some of the people today who are have the ethos, or you think in 20 years will have the clout or the ethos as like the Jack Nicholsons or the Harrison Fords or even the Brad Pitts, I don't think I can name one actor under 35 who I think has those chops right now.
I don't know about ethos, but I think mystery, the closest I could think of is Robert Pattinson, because I always see like weird ass stories about him, and he's a very private guy in a very unprivate time. So yeah. I think that's the closest thing we have to like you know, you always hear those magical stories about Bill Murray, shit like that. I think he's the closest we have to that.
And I think a lot of people think that Robert Pattinson's a weirdo, but the only reason they think that is because they only know like a few stories and like a little bit of stuff.
Yeah, like, I love Robert Pattinson.
Like apparently he went on a date with one of his stalkers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like apparently there was this girl who was stalking him, and he just decided, all right, you know what? You've been stalking me long enough. Let's just go out. And yeah, he's full of like weird stories. And I do feel bad for that guy, because his entire career has been skewed solely because of the Twilight films.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't think anybody hates Twilight more than he does.
Yep.
But it's weird not having the famous actor anymore.
The closest I think we have now is like The Rock or like Chris Pratt, which I think is kind of an embarrassment if that's the, you know, A-list guys we're shoveling out there.
Well, I think one of the biggest problems, and this is obviously with no disrespect to the major, major Marvel, Star Wars production companies, are that there are simply too many blockbuster films, too many superhero movies, too many sequels, too many series for anyone to be in standout movies that really are impactful anymore.
I 100% agree.
Everything is a sequel. Everything is a prequel. Everything is, this is what happened between this movie and this movie. And if you go back to the 70s or 80s, you'd be lucky to find a sequel to any movie aside from a Star Wars or an Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
And even then they knew when to quit. Now that's not saying that 16 years later, George Lucas probably should have, you know, still known when to quit when 1999 rolled around with the Star Wars movies, because he made the single greatest Star Wars film of all time, The Phantom Menace, that blew all the other ones out of the water. But I think we've just, I say we, like you and I are to blame. There's this oversaturation at this point.
Absolutely. That's the one saving grace I think all these streaming services are going to start bringing out. They're going to start being competitive with each other and giving a lot of indie or lesser known films or people opportunities, which I think in the long run is going to be good. But absolutely everything is dominated by the studio system right now.
It's unbelievable. And they're so hard to get out. You watch any award show and you're like, what movie is this? What? Like, and it sucks because there's some amazing movies. Like 2014, I was watching, was it the Oscars? And when Birdman won, I was like, I don't know if they won. They might have just been nominated. But when Birdman was mentioned, I was like, what is Birdman? I've never heard of that in my life. Like, and because we're so deep in the sequel to this, prequel to that mentality with movies these days, you don't get those quality films. And when you do, even the movies that are either were meant to be small become these giant films. They lose their like small movie luster. And yeah, I think Uncut Gems is a great example of that.
100%. I love that movie.
Oh, it's a great movie, but it became this like mega thing. Like people started talking about Adam Sandler winning an Oscar. They started talking about the basketball players in the movie, things like that. And it stopped being like that small movie experience. And it was like, everybody was go to see Uncut Gems.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing, I don't want to say nothing pure about movies anymore, but there's just this system that we have is not working.
Those like magical movies are definitely harder to come by.
Oh yeah.
They're there. They're just not where you're looking for them anymore, which I think is a shame. Cause I live and die by like the movie theater experience. I'm a huge fan of that. That it's very important to me. I never want that to go away.
Oh yeah. Oh, COVID must've been such a burden for you then.
Oh, it sucked.
Yeah.
First opportunity I had to go back, I went. I forget what I saw.
Tenet, are you one of the guys who can go to the movie theater alone and not feel weird about it?
I've done it so many times, Ben.
Oh my God, I can't do that. I've tried. It's funny, summer 2016 or fall, when was it? It's a weird release date. March. It was March of 2016 when Dawn of Justice came out.
Yeah.
I asked my brother to go with me. And at this point, 2016, he was like 20, 21. He was still pretty young. He's like 26 now, and I asked him to go with me, and he always loved to come to superhero movies with me, but he had seen the plot in previews and he was like, this is literally too dumb for even me to want to go to. And this is the guy who called that Guardians of the Galaxy would be a flop and still went to go see it. And he was like, I'm sorry, Batman fighting Superman and then Wonder Woman just showing up. This is a nightmare. It's just too dumb for me. I'm not going. And I had to go to the movie theater alone. And it's such an odd experience. But I guess maybe I do have to start trying that more.
I support it. I think you should. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, nothing weird with it. I think that's one of the actually very few activities that's socially acceptable to do by yourself. It's like you're just watching a movie. You don't need to do that with anybody else.
Yeah. It's got to feel kind of nice, though, I guess, to tune out.
The only thing you lose is the like conversation aspect after, which I also enjoy a lot. But
just like the like, oh, why do you think he did this? Why do you think he did that?
Type stuff. Just like I always love going to see like, as even though we were just shitting on him, like going to see the new Marvel or superhero or Star Wars movie and then like going out to eat with my friends and just talking about it the whole time, like what we liked, what we didn't like, what's going to happen next, shit like that. That's part of the experience for me, and I love that.
Yeah. You know, at least there's like some things that aren't going to, I guess, change too much. And as much as people have tried to change it with the streaming premiums and things like that, like the, you can watch Black Widow on Disney Plus, but here's an extra, you have to pay an extra $20 or whatever. There's some nice things about film that are kind of etched in stone. The idea of the screening or the idea of the premiere night, things like that. But we're definitely,
I not to cut you off. No, I argue with my dad about that constantly. He's a big time pessimist, and he's always like, whenever something new comes out, he's always telling me like the theater's dying, movies aren't going to be in the theater anymore. And I always tell him like, as long as Marvel movies are making $2-3 billion in the box office, the theaters aren't going anywhere. Trust me.
I mean, it sucks because, you know, the past 20 minutes I've been talking about how there needs to be a muckraking of the system where it's just these giant colossal movies. But at the same time, the giant colossal movies are what are keeping the theaters afloat. Absolutely. We can't rely on Reddit to inflate the price of AMC stock every time that, you know, it looks like a theater is going to start closing.
Apes together.
Dude, it's that was a fun couple weeks. Yeah, dude, it's I don't know what the future of movies and what the future of film is, but I know that I don't like where it's going. And it is pessimistic. And I appreciate that you're an optimist of it, but I don't like, one, how everything is instant. Everything is, if you want to see this, boom, you can see it for an extra $15, you know, $19.99, whatever. And I don't like how people don't treat it as an experience anymore.
And I agree with that.
And maybe in the past 50 years, the novelness of watching a movie has in a theater has worn off, because it's not like saying, hey, do you want to catch a movie? Isn't like a big thing anymore, because there's just more shit to do. We're just saturated with shit in our lives that we can do. But I don't know where film is going. And I don't know where the actor, actress, or I don't know where the structure of famous actors are going. And I don't know where the idea of the film, of the theater is going. And if the past year has been an indicator, watching the rise of connected TV, the rise of the Rokus and the Fire Sticks, especially during the pandemic, it doesn't look good.
I was going to say, I think COVID's going to shake things up a little bit in terms of how things look in the near future or in the long-term future.
Do you think it's good or bad? Like, do you think there's a good future for film? Film's going to come back?
I'd like to be optimistic. I don't think it's looking bright at the moment. I think when things start getting back into the swing of things, things will start picking up again. But I think everything that happened probably scared a lot of the studios into, you know, axing a lot.
And I mean, even TV is kind of kicking film's ass at this point.
Oh, it's, you know, destroying.
Shows. We're not even in the golden age of TV, the new golden age of TV anymore. I think that ended Mad Men. But the idea that there is literally a show for everything, it's more marketable. And it sucks that studios or TV producers, whatever, can in their heads be like, all right, it's not about what the content is. It's about what the theme is and what's most marketable. But TV is really giving traditional film a run for its money.
Absolutely. And I think people are starting to realize that. That's why every company has a streaming service now.
Yeah. Oh, every single one. The streaming wars are in full effect. What do you have? You have Peacock, you have Paramount Plus, you have the Netflixes, the Hulus, the Disney Pluses, things like that.
HBO
Prime. Max. Yep. It's Amazon Prime. Yep. And for every 50 terrible shows, there's one good one. But at the end of the day, there's that these 50 shows to watch instead of a movie. And yep. People don't have, I guess, the time or the attention spans to sit down and watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for 3 hours.
Like, going to the movies used to be a special occasion. Okay. Now it's, if somebody has everything at their fingertips, why are they going to go out, drive to the movie, pay all this money, take 3 hours out of the day if they don't have to?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the process to getting to a theater, the process to like deciding, especially as a kid, like I remember I spent all of my summer 2007 or maybe 2008 in hopes of getting to see Spider-Man 3. That was the theme of an entire summer for me. It was this one movie that, you know, at one point, hopefully my dad would be like, all right, let's head to the movie theater and go see it. I don't think we have that anymore. I think we have a huge demographic that just says, when it comes out on Disney Plus, when it comes out on Netflix, whatever, I'll see it. Or we have the ones who are like, all right, we'll just pay the premium to shut our kid up and sit him in front of the TV. It's just, it there's nothing, there's not a lot that's special about film these days.
The last really like special theater experience I had of like a modern day movie, I would probably have to be Endgame, and not even because of the movie itself, which I might get a lot of shit for. It's all right.
It's a fun movie.
That's one thing the Marvel movies do very well is they make their movies, not every movie, but they made Endgame like an event. That was an event you had to go to. If you did not know what happened at Endgame, you're missing out. You were not in the know. And that was the first movie in a while, and I think since, that I felt like I need to see this on opening night or I'm going to be at a loss.
Yeah, I feel that.
But that's a shame because it used to be like a different movie every week was like that.
It's funny. The last movie I really wanted to see, like badly, was actually Joker. Like that was the last time I was in I was like, I need to go to a theater and watch this. And then I ended up seeing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in theaters, but that was only because someone was like, it's the new Tarantino movie, you got to go see it. And that was a natural experience of just being like, all right, I guess I'll go see a movie. People don't do that anymore. People don't just get, all right, like I have a free night. I'm just going to go to a movie theater and watch a movie, I guess. And it's not even something like, oh, I want to see this because of the plot of this, or like it fits into this and we get to big reveal of what happened to this character. The idea of just saying like, all right, shit, it's 7:30. I don't have work tomorrow. Let me just go see a movie. That barely exists anymore.
Yeah. That's a shame.
And even the people who were raised in the time period where like the movie was a special thing, the movie was what brought families together. They're even adapting. I mean, The Irishman was a Netflix release.
Yeah.
And if you told Scorsese in the 80s, if you said to him, listen, or 90s, in 20, 21, or 30 years rather, you're going to make a movie that's directly going to be able to be watched on television, he would have had a fit. I argue that he would have lost his mind because he would have equated that with a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
Yep. But that's just the way it is these days.
But with that on the particular, on the flip side, I think that's going to be good in the long term because I just think it's going to give more movies the opportunity to shine that wouldn't have gotten. Like, especially with the like Disney buying 20th Century, you're not going to get these indie movies from the big studios anymore just because it's not worth it. They're making billions off of the tent poles they have.
Yeah.
But something like Hulu, Netflix will pick up something small and it could be great. like Uncut Gems.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of like the shitty 70s and 80s movie that people forgot about, that's in hindsight, a pretty cool thing. Like the idea that there were these bad movies from the years gone by that weren't part of this rigorous quantified studio process where someone was just like, I have an idea for a movie. And some studio exec was like, yeah, I guess here's, you know, $30,000, which is the equivalent of like after inflation today, I don't know, like a couple million or something. Make this movie. Doesn't really matter to me if it does well or not. The idea that in the channels of Lost in History are just like shitty movies, I actually really like that. And I don't think we have a lot of bad movies these days. We have poorly acted movies. We have movies that don't really make sense, but we don't have bad movies. Unless you are a Rotten Tomatoes writer for any DC film.
Yeah, which don't even get me started. That's a whole nother 2-hour podcast we can go into.
We got the time, but so I think we're gonna wrap in a little bit. But I do appreciate you coming on the inaugural episode for season 2.
Yeah, of course,
it's good to get another film buff's perspective, and especially talk to you after 15 years.
Yeah, we really gotta do this in person next time.
But yeah, it was great having you on. I appreciate it. So 2001, A Space Odyssey, Stanley Kubrick, check it out. Or go the complete different direction and watch American Graffiti by George Lucas. Two very, very different films, but that's the great thing about film. Everything impacts people in a different way. Kev, thanks so much for coming out.
Of course. Love to have you back.
If you enjoyed that last episode of the Dorkcast, please go and subscribe on whatever streaming platform you're using. We can't make it happen without you. And this will also entitle you to updates on when new episodes arrive on the platform. Thanks so much.